Hello and welcome to your midweek award-nominated Pod on the Tyne. More on that in just a tick. Good one game, terrible the next. But that's enough about us. What about Newcastle United? Followed up that awful defeat at West Ham with what can only be described as a comfortable Champions League victory over Athletic Club. I'm Taylor Payne and I'm joined by Chris Woff and George Coggan. Hello, Christopher Woff. How are you?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, you mentioned Athletic Club, so when I was at Gateshead Stadium yesterday watching the under-19s, at the end of the match, there were some people connected to Bilbao there who turned round to ask me and Mark Carruthers, journalist from who covers a lot of North East football, basically asking why there was a lot of fireworks going on next to Gateshead Stadium. And Mark Carruthers very kindly just said, that's a long story, and sort of just passed it over to me. And then I had to try and briefly explain to people from the Basque Country why there is a... Is it a celebration? Whatever Guy Fawkes Night, Bonfire Night is in the UK. And for those overseas listeners who don't know, basically on November the 5th, lots of people light bonfires or set off fireworks in the UK. Basically an acknowledgement of in the early 17th century when Guy Fawkes and other conspirators tried to blow up Parliament but failed to do so. So it's a rather odd celebration, if that's a word of it. But yeah, trying to explain that to people from the Basque Country was not the easiest thing I've ever tried to do.
No, I can imagine.
We like to celebrate someone being hanged, drawn and quartered to death by burning his effigy on a bonfire. It's all good fun, though. We celebrate it with our children. We have sparklers. We have fireworks. Yeah, just all good nature fun. A completely normal thing to do. I don't know what the problem is.
We used to throw effigies of him onto a bonfire as well at one time, didn't we? Yeah.
I've literally just said that.
Oh.
Yeah. We burn his effigy on a bonfire. I mean, I used exactly those words.
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Great start.
Okay, so we have to start by saying thank you to the FSA for our nomination in the Best Club Podcast category in their annual awards. We're completely blown away by that, as we all are, by your continuing support to us and your continuing to listen to us. Subscribers to our Extra Time offering got a dedicated Champions League matchday podcast this week. For more information on that, please go to podonthetine.supportandcast.fm. But we'll take a deeper look into Newcastle's performance shortly. First up, chaps, let's start with some headlines. George, Newcastle United climbed sixth in the Champions League table above 30 great European clubs.
Yeah, they're sixth in the Champions League, which is a nice nice way of putting it. I don't know how else to describe it.
We're in the European
league
positions, George.
Yeah, they're
sixth.
There
we are.
They're absolutely level on points with Real Madrid, with PSG, with Liverpool. Yes, okay, the quality of opposition perhaps isn't what it was a couple of years ago. But no complaints. They're in a really strong position. Another good night at St. James's Park. Newcastle were professional. They had some rocky moments, but they got the job done. Good night all round.
Fabulous stuff. Chris, Peter Silverstone departs.
Yes, Newcastle's chief commercial officer is currently on gardening leave. I think that Dan Ashworth's gardening leave is finally finished, so Peter Silverstone's taken over the job there. But he's been at Newcastle for 3 years since Dave Hopkinson's come in as CEO in September. We did think there would be changes, and this seems to be one at the very top, so we'll get into that a bit later on.
George, the Lasses are at Durham.
They are indeed. It's the first derby of the season. It's closely followed by another one. Can Newcastle follow up that important, impressive 4-1 victory over Ipswich Town? There'll be no Amber Keegan-Stubbs, sadly. She's injured. She's broken a foot. Chris and I had a chat with our good mate at St. James's Park last night. So I want to give a shout out to her. But yeah, it's a big match and a big game. Which is the same way of
that's
saying
good.
The same thing. Yeah, yeah. But that's just how big it is. It's a big match. It's a big game. It's a big fixture. It's a big tie.
More Boxing Day delight, Chris.
Well, unless you are one of the travelling fans who has to get across to Manchester and back for an 8 p.m. kickoff on Boxing Day. But initially, Newcastle were not scheduled to be playing in that annual feast of football, as it usually is on Boxing Day, because it's on a Friday. Most of the games are over the weekend, and the Premier League contractually want their fixtures to be on the weekend with Sky and TNT. But Newcastle's have been moved their trip to Manchester United at 8 p.m. UK time on Boxing Day.
It feels like Newcastle and Man United play each other at Christmas time every season. Apparently, 6 of the last 10 fixtures, Newcastle United v Man United, has been at Christmas time or around the festive period. which is a mad stat, really.
George is going to be spending his Boxing Day going across to Lancashire and back. So
I'm a very generous human being. You with little James, you can play with whatever presents he's bought you. And I'll don't worry about me, Chris. I'll spend my Boxing Day in a travel lodge in Trafford.
Right, let's crack on, chaps. A little bit of a deep dive into that Champions League fixture last night. Newcastle's fullbacks, Emil Kraft and Dan Boone, got a bit of stick after the West Ham debacle, didn't they? But Kieran Trippier was back for Athletic. Lewis Hall came off the bench and looked good. And then, well, Dan Boone, wow, George, you wax lyrical about the header on the matchday pod. But I wanted to say that is quite possibly the most beautiful goal I've ever seen in my life. Aesthetically pleasing, I think, is the term that I would use. I was right behind it where I was stood in the Millburn stand, and I was convinced it was going out for a throw-in when the ball first left his head, and then for it to just fade back into the corner. Oh, my God. And the celebration was wonderful as well. I've never seen anything like it, genuinely. It put me in mind of one other header, which was a Steve Bruce header for Manchester United against Sheffield Wednesday when he came in from a corner and he headed it and it sort of bent in the corner. But this is even better because it was from further out. It's an incredible goal.
Yeah, everything about the goal was beautiful. The the delivery was great. Obviously, it was a routine that they'd worked on. You could see Byrne and Jason Tindall having a little interaction afterwards. You know, it was a training ground sort of routine. The run was gorgeous. The way he kind of ran away from goal. Byrne did. It was sort of a weird run round the back of the Athletic defence that just wasn't picked up, and he was unmarked, but even so, that technique to bend it in, we were also right behind it, Taylor, and it was just glorious seeing it sort of turn and curl and then kind of sneak into that corner of the goal. Never let it be said that headers can't be a thing of beauty. It was just absolutely stunning. And of course, it was the same one too as the cup final, Trippier and Byrne, kind of reminiscent of that. Eddie Howe talked about that afterwards, so let's have a listen.
Similar feeling for me for the cup final in a sense that it's a strong header from distance and it's had the power and the direction to go in. It'd be very difficult for him to do something as magical and as memorable as that again. But that, in terms of a technical header, that was an incredible finish. I'd like to see it again to see actually how far out it was. I mean, I was right behind it. I had a great view. It looked in from the minute he struck it. And it was a well-worked routine. So well done to everyone involved in that. And brilliant moment for him.
So that was Eddie Howe's take. Now, this is exciting. Chris has just rushed off halfway through our podcast. He's only gone and done a whistle-stop interview with Sir Leslie of Ferdinand. Let's hear what the great man had to say about Big Dan Byrne's supernatural noggin.
Sometimes, with a header, it's about the ball that comes in and the cross coming in as to what you can do with it. And the way the ball would come in and the way that Dan was running, that always meant he was going to get that sort of momentum on the ball. It's an extraordinary header. It's a great header. But that is, do you know when you catch something absolutely flush? And you know it as a player, you're someone will strike the ball and you go, ah, he's absolutely caught that flush. It's the perfect cross and the perfect head, if that makes sense.
It does, but the way that it almost like starts to the as if it's going to go wide of the right hand post, and then sort of comes in almost like a draw in golf. Would that be what he necessarily had planned to do, or do you think that that's just the way that the ball sort of moved? Do you think he necessarily would have intended to get that exact draw on it? Can you plan to get that draw on it?
No, I don't think you do. It's just like I said, the ball coming in and him meeting it at the perfect time. On the run, on the momentum, and that's what takes the ball the way it does. I mean, listen, you can move your head in a way that can swerve a ball and move the ball left to right, but that would be, you'd be thinking about it. Whereas there, he was trying to get as much on the ball as he possibly could. Did he speak afterwards? Did anyone ask him, did he mean to do that?
He did speak afterwards. He just sort of said, he basically just said, I just went ahead it. He didn't really go into the sort of ins and outs. He just said, yeah, but just put my head towards the ball. So I think you're right. And as you would know it even more, that if it's the cross that sort of makes the goal, and the cross was ideal and his time. And obviously it was a bit of a set piece move in terms of that identified that there was going to be space there. For someone like Dan Byrne, he obviously had the wonderful goal in the cup final
as well. He probably doesn't get as many goals for the sort of height and maybe the set-piece threat that Newcastle offer, but he clearly has the technique there if he gets the delivery, seemingly.
Yeah, and I think as well what you got, you know, the part to it as well is that Dan's the size he is, so everybody knows he's a threat. They'll be trying to counteract it. They'll put two players on him to block his run and all sorts of things that happen in the game. There was a bit of naivety in the way that they set up yesterday to allow Dan to get the run he did, to be able to get the head on the ball in the way that he did. It was a great cross, and it was absolutely sublime technique in terms of getting there at the right time. You know, everything was just perfect. It was such a great header.
When you used to head the ball, not necessarily exactly like that, but when you knew it was going, can you tell as soon as it sort of leaves your head? Do you get does it feel different? And can you almost see behind it when it's going to go in?
There's a couple of occasions where, you know, just thinking about sort of my career and what happened, there's a couple of occasions where, I mean, remember playing for Newcastle against Man City at home at the Gallagher, and I think it was Ginola was at the swap sides of Keith Gillespie just quickly, and he whipped one in. And as soon as I headed it, I knew it was in the back of the net. You just know the power, the technique, and you know the goalkeeper ain't getting nowhere near it. Did the same thing against when I went to Spurs in my first couple of games. I think it was my second game or first game at home against Aston Villa. Ball coming like that. In fact, Rule Fox had crossed it. And I just caught it flash on, and I knew. And I remember my mate was standing behind the goal. He said, I thought someone had hit it for 30 yards. And it's just one of those where you know you just catch it absolutely clean. All the stuff that you work on, working on, heading the ball and all that, you don't always catch them bang in the middle. That one was straight out of the middle of the forward.
A final question. When you mention the delivery, the power, is it sometimes better to head the ball if it's already got, you're almost focusing on the direction of it rather than having to get the power behind it?
Yeah, without a shadow of that. If it's a good cross and it's a quality cross, then you're just putting your head on it and knowing that the power's already on the cross and that's going to take it in the direction you want it to go in with the power you want it to go in. Sometimes you see whether it's a forward or a defender swinging their head at it because they're trying to generate the power and get the power from their neck muscles. If it's a great cross, all you do is put your head on it and it will just go exactly where you need it to go.
How lovely. If you've got the Sir Les seal of approval, Shearer beaming ear to ear on the sidelines. There's not much else you need, really. Shea Given beat George the jump with Bend It Like Burn, which was fun too. And the crowd on our Discord server enjoyed it almost as much as we did, it seems. Chris Lane, he's posited a theory on the Dan Burn header. He says, I suggest to you that Dan Burn did not curl a header into the goal from here, but rather that he has the godly power to freeze the ball in the space-time continuum and allows the Earth's rotation at nearly 1,000 miles an hour to simply catch the ball as the Earth spins. George, you're a scientist.
I am. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I didn't even know that the Earth was round, to be fair. So thanks, Chris, for that. It's a good to know.
It's entirely new information.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's one of those goals that you sort of, once it's happened, you think, oh yeah, that was always going to happen. And you know, you sort of see it, but the bend was amazing. Is Dan Burn a supernatural being? That's a perfectly good question. Is he a god? Yes, I would answer to that.
I'm very keen on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Absolutely. But that's a good description. Yeah, it was gorgeous. It was gorgeous. And, you know, yes, he did get a bit of stick after West Ham, as did everybody. There has been, you know, that the talk about him being at left back, it's not where he wants to be playing, as he said kind of repeatedly over the past couple of days. He loves playing at centre half. But of course, you know, will help the team, will do everything he can at left back.
Of course, yeah.
But the other little story from last night, or one of the other little stories, was Lewis Hall coming back, comes on as a sub, and looked pretty good.
He really was a bright spark when he came on, and I love the fact that he hasn't played football for a little while. He's not had many games. He's been injured. And the natural sort of thought process for anybody sort of trying to work their way back into the game would be, keep it simple, pass the ball short, feel your way into the game, just try and, you know, try and feel your way back into being a fullback in a Champions League game. No, Lewis Hall gets the ball down and decides to try and dribble through the entire Bilbao team. Not only once, but twice. Some of his footwork was just incredible. And I'm really excited to see him playing again for Newcastle United, because I think we've got a genuine star on our hands with him. he's got a bit of everything about him, hasn't he? His technical ability is fantastic. He gets up and down the pitch, and he's always looking to be positive, and I love that about him.
Yeah, I mean, we love a redemption arc, don't we? And, we do. You know, you talk about when he arrived, how difficult he found it to get up to speed, those early games where he was constantly being sort of substituted, and then last season he was just absolutely phenomenal. We forget about that because, you know, he and Anthony Gordon end up missing the kind of cup final, but he was astonishing last season, and to have that back in the team's armoury, the club's armoury, is really important. Howe said after the match that, you know, he purposely didn't want to give him minutes at West Ham, and purposely did, in a perfect world, want to give him minutes against Athletic.
Yeah.
Looked really good, and yeah, and you know, when everyone's fit, Newcastle do have good options at fullback, and you know, they need that, and they need him.
And it's absolutely no shade to Dan Byrne either, is it? Because he's done a great job of deputising him. What is not his natural position, he'll be the first to admit. But, you know, when you've got a player with that kind of ability and Lewis Hall, plus his age, you know, his potential for growth, you've got to give him minutes and you've got to get him in the team when he's fit. He's potentially going to be a wonderful player going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Dan said in his pre-match press conference, he doesn't think he's peaked as a player. He still thinks he's getting better. It's been an astonishing 2025 for him too. Winning a cup for his hometown team, getting into the England squad. He's not finished. I mean, if people write him off, he's had that all through his career. He won't care. You know, as far as he's concerned, bring it on.
I'm happy. I'm down to get me suit. Message.
So Newcastle are becoming predictably inconsistent. Home versus away, cup versus the league. Are they a big game team? Are they a cup team? George, what are they?
Well, I mean, that's a question I've been asking myself throughout my entire life. This is something that I kind of wrote about straight after the game. I do think it's sort of interesting. Like, we were all, we chatted before the match and we're saying, like, we know what's coming against Athletic. I mean, okay, they weren't in control of the whole match. They weren't dominant. It wasn't an absolutely blissful performance, but it was professional. They got the job done. Yeah. And by the end, it was comfortable. We all knew that was coming. We knew that St. James's would have a decent atmosphere. And yet it follows arguably the worst performance of the Eddie Howe era, certainly up there in the top three, where they just couldn't get it going against a team who are and have been absolutely abysmal. Can we see it coming against Brentford? I mean, you know, we'll talk about that match in a minute. But it does feel to me like they're rousing themselves for these games where there is difference. Home games, granted, but the big games. You know, they did the same against Tottenham. Tottenham was such a good performance, I thought. It was sort of consummate in what they did. And, you know, it took them to a yet another quarterfinal in the League Cup. It's something I asked Eddie Howe about afterwards. He hated that question. You know, he doesn't want Newcastle to be seen as a cup team. He wants them to be consistent week in, week out.
Yeah.
But they're not being that. They're not. They're something else. And on the one hand, it's very good because, you know, I want to see Newcastle win things and compete for trophies. On the other hand, I do not want to go to London again and have to see that rubbish.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you can make sense of it in some ways, but in others, the lurch from, you know, what we saw on Sunday to what we saw against Athletic is so stark. I don't know if Chris has any sort of great theories about it, but
the thing that I find sort of difficult to get my head around, and I don't have an answer for it necessarily, is that throughout the whole of last season, it's trying to get Newcastle back into the Champions League. The goal is to get back into the Champions League, And then this year, they're in the Champions League and they're doing well, and it's like, oh, the league form is being affected by that, but they need to get back in the Champions League for next year. So now that you're in the Champions League, do you almost lose focus from that because you need to get back into it for next year? At what point
does the priority switch?
Newcastle as a club clearly aren't strong enough yet. Yeah, you try so hard to get in the Champions League, and I know it's for largely to do with finances as much as anything else, but that's also where Newcastle want to be competing. It's where the best players want to play. Alexander Isak, Sandro Tonali, latest comments about his sort of future, and he was quoted after the game last night, basically. He was it'll get spun probably negatively in some ways, but he basically just said, I can't say for certain I'm going to be here. I don't want to say I'll be here for 10 years and then leave in a few years, but because you don't know what's going to happen in football. And he mentioned Alexander Isak's situation, but he said he's very happy and settled. And it's that, it's a very difficult one, because I just think Newcastle as a club aren't ready yet to be at full throttle on all of those fronts. And I think that's partly the coaching staff and players learning from that, from the experience and gaining European experience in that regard. But also, they're just, the depth, maybe they're stronger than the previous campaign, but they still don't have the likes of a squad like Arsenal. So I just think that they aren't ready to compete three times a week in every single competition. I think psychologically and maybe physically they're not at that level yet, so that partly explains it. But I don't think it should, I don't think it can be used as an excuse for how poor they were at West Ham. That was very much an aberration, even given the negative away form and poor away form they've had stretching over a long period of time. That was particularly bad.
Yeah, I'm sort of interested in this whole thing. I mean, I did preface my question to how about it. When I was little, Newcastle were a cup team. Newcastle was seen as a cup team. They had a reputation of that, you know, they'd won the Intercity Fairs Cup the year before I was born. The cup wins in the 1950s, okay, were a bit distant, but it's not like it was generations, you know, generations upon generations. And the last time Newcastle had won the league was far closer to the turn of the century.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't an insult to describe a team as a cup team. It was just something that was part of their sort of history. I mean, I do mind it because, I don't want to see what happened at West Ham again. I don't want them to be awful in the league. I don't mind the idea of this club being turned on by the idea of winning things and going deep into trophies. But Chris is also right. The danger, of course, with that approach and with that philosophy is that the big players do see the Champions League as their natural home. You know, that's where they want to be season upon season. And so, therefore, they have to find a way of being more effective with the bread and butter to get there again.
Well, they do. And another night, another disappointing display from our England winger, and one which ended early with an injury as well. We have to ask, where are you, Anthony Gordon, Chris?
Well, he was receiving treatment, presumably in the treatment table inside St James's Park after that. I think he went off in the 41st minute. Hadn't looked right from the start, really.
No.
Against Athletic Club, is touch was terrible. I think he gave the ball away three times in the first 10 minutes, four times in the first 20. There was one where he gave it away and Athletic even went through and had a shot, which Pope had to save during the first half. So he hadn't looked comfortable. He looked like he tried to sprint on a couple of occasions and couldn't get by his fullback. And it looked more than just the fullback was quicker than him. I think that he just couldn't physically run as much as he liked. He had been struggling with a hip problem. Howe spoke afterwards about it being a recurrence of that, but didn't really know the extent of it. But we know this has been his competition. He'd got four goals in his first three matches in the Champions League this season. He'd been influential in Newcastle, being in the position that they were going into this game. But in the Premier League, it's been a very different story. No assists in 19 Premier League games, no goals in 21, all the way those both stretch back to January. And yeah, it's just been very frustrating. He basically almost encapsulates, but to an even greater extent, the difference between Newcastle in the cup competitions and in the Premier League. He just can't quite get going in the Premier League. At home, he's been slightly better than away from home, but in particular, away from home, he hasn't really produced. And maybe a spell out of the side, A, so he can hopefully get fully fit, but B, maybe just to reassess a little bit, it is what he needs going into this international break, where presumably, if this hip problem is anything that's going to keep him out this weekend, you suspect that means he'd probably withdraw from the England squad as well.
Yeah, the word that Eddie Howe used about this injury, the hip injury, was plagued. He said he's been plagued with it for a few weeks. And so perhaps that does put a slightly different spin on the struggles that he's been going through. I mean, he hasn't been good in a lot of matches, but it's also not that long ago that Jose Mourinho was saying that he was man of the match against Benfica. Obviously, he scored against Benfica. He'd said we could not compete with their horsepower. Their wingers have pace and power. They have four of them. I think we have to put that in some perspective. I think there is, on occasion, a body language issue.
I agree with that.
That can come down to mentality and attitude. When he's on it, he's brilliant, but it's not happening often enough, and it isn't happening in the Premier League often enough, particularly away from home. I think we have to give them a bit of a break in terms of this injury. I thought sort of in pre-season and in the early games of the season where he was having to fill not his natural role, he offered the team huge energy. There was a lot of selfless running. He pressed from the front. He led from led by example. It wasn't where he wanted to be playing, but I thought his body language and attitude was really good. So, yeah, I mean, we want Anthony Gordon at his best to come back, but you know, perhaps this break will do him good, if indeed there is a break.
Okay, chaps, let's move on. Some news from the back offices of Newcastle United. Peter Silverstone departs. Chris, is this one a blow or a blessing?
I'm going to very much sit on the proverbial fence and say that can it sort of be both, or can it just be a changing of the guard, really, and just the sort of signs of the new times? So, yeah, Peter Silverstone is leaving as chief commercial officer. As I said at the start of the show, he's on garden leave at the moment. He is heading to Juventus to become, I think, their chief business officer, which is a very similar position. But this is, well, it's sort of linked to David Hopkinson coming in, although I think it's Silverstone himself has suggested that he was got this opportunity from Juventus, wanted to go there, and then it's almost sort of a mutually sort of beneficial parting of ways. I think that really longer term, Silverstone and his position in general, maybe whether there's going to be a chief commercial officer, I think there's some doubt over that going forward, and sort of different executive positions will be brought in by David Hopkinson as really he pushes to increase revenues massively. So yeah, it we expected there to be change under the new CEO. He wanted time to really get to know Newcastle, listen and learn, but now he's in a sort of period during his current 100-day review, which should finish by mid-December, in which case when we'll follow a big message as to the future direction of the club. Already we're starting to see some of the change that is happening, and maybe those who aren't necessarily on board with exactly what he wants to do, or he doesn't necessarily see as being ideally aligned with his future vision, and then it becomes beneficial for both to have a partner of ways. So Silverstone's been there for 3 years, has had some successes, as we're going to come on to in a bit. Also a bit of, I think, of a divisive figure in terms of could and should commercial revenues have been even higher and increased more exponentially than they already have. That's something that's up for debate, but that's definitely the focus now under Hopkinson. In the post-Silverstone era, I think we will start to see a perhaps different approach to bringing in that greater revenue.
So what has he done and what hasn't he done so far in the time he's been here?
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember that, you know, Newcastle didn't have a commercial department effectively when the takeover happened. I mean, it was a one-man band. It was Lee Charnley sitting in a broom cupboard with an abacus and a, you know, red phone that linked him directly to Mike Ashley, yeah, who would answer the phone and tell him to go away. Newcastle's kind of commercial sponsorship department, it was all linked to Sports Direct. And so they've started from scratch, effectively. So, you know, there needs to be that sort of context. Since the takeover, you know, the departments have grown at huge speed. Revenue has increased at a rapid rate. There have been some big deals like Adidas. The Stack has come into play, is now a kind of major part of the sort of city's infrastructure in terms of entertainment and food and things like that. The club shop has been redone. There has, however, always been a sense that they could, possibly should have done more. He was always asked about things like training ground sponsors and things like that. And the feeling is within the club that this is something that needs to be supercharged. And, you know, I think that is David Hopkinson's remit. I think that's what he wants to do, that they have to find a way of getting the club's infrastructure in terms of, not in terms of stadium training ground, although that's important, but in terms of the other departments keeping pace a bit better with the first team, which has raced ahead. You know, if they want to be a top team, they need to be a top club in terms of revenue. You know, we know that. And so that is something that they really want and need moving forward. I think the word divisive is a sort of interesting one that Chris mentioned. I think perhaps they want a bit more alignment on that side of the club, and, you know, that might be something that they look at moving forward too.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at the sort of commercial income, in the end of the 2021-22 season, which was before he came in, Newcastle's commercial revenue was 28 million. It had gone up 7 million the year before, but basically it had flatlined around sort of 25 million throughout the entirety of Mike Ashley's time. And then you look at sort of last year, Newcastle's commercial revenue was up to 83.6 million. This is, sorry, for the 23-24 season. So it's basically more than tripled during that time. So it's not been negligible, that the impact that he's had. It has been significant. And that's not just him, but also that he's been sort of heavily involved with that. But then Newcastle's are still miles behind the Big Six average, which is the so-called Big Six average, which is £274 million average commercial income. And I think that there are some at the club who maybe saw it as that Silverstone's success was largely, if the team were doing well, that's where a lot of this commercial growth comes from. And obviously the two of them are linked, but at some stage Newcastle need to get beyond the fact that the first team is doing well or not doing well. They just need to make sure they're bringing commercial revenue from all avenues and globalise the sort of brand, and going forward that's where it becomes. So yeah, definitely has had some successes. I think that he sometimes has been, it's almost overlooked as to, oh yeah, well, they haven't, as George said, haven't done the training ground sponsor, haven't done training kit sponsor, but there are also reasons why they haven't done those. But yeah, going forward, I think we will start to see a change of direction, and it'll be interesting to see how he does it at Juventus, having been at Arsenal and Newcastle. He's got a reasonable CV already under his belt.
He certainly has. Right then, let's move on, chaps. Don't look now, but Newcastle United are back on the road this weekend. But can they get back on track at Brentford? And what do they need to turn around their woeful away form? Are the Newcastle United of 2025 streetwise enough? Whatever happened to that merry band of shithousers, George?
I think this is an interesting question. And again, it's something that people around the team, around the club, have been asking in public around the Athletic match and post West Ham, where, you know, they were meek, weren't they? We don't have to go back very far to sort of remember that Newcastle team who would do whatever it took to get a result, to get a positive result.
They would play fast and loose with the rules, George, wouldn't they?
Well, they blurred the lines. They did. But they did it in a way, which I loved as a, you know, as a Newcastle fan. You know, yeah, waste time if necessary. Jacob Murphy going down for treatment. We saw that happen, you know, regularly. Nick Pope go down for quote-unquote treatment, you know, taking the sting out of matches. But, you know, doing far more than that, knowing when to win a free kick, knowing when to slow things down, when to speed things up, you know, getting under the skin of the opposition. I don't feel like we've been talking about that very much recently.
Do you think there's something in the fact that Newcastle aren't always the underdogs anymore against bigger teams?
No, I think that's absolutely a fascinating question. And again, that was something that Byrne was asked about and talked about. He said, like, we have to keep playing like underdogs.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you play like underdogs when you're expected to win and you're really good at football? Obviously, Newcastle's style of play has modified, or theoretically it's modified. You know, you bring in players like Sandro Tonali, Nick Voltomardi, your style of play is going to change. You've got talking about great technical players. You know, it's very different now to the team that Eddie Howe inherited and made tough to beat. You know, you've got good footballers who want to dominate in terms of playing good football. So Alex Ferguson was a master of this. I've talked about this before. He made Man United, the biggest club in the world, the smallest club in the world, by sort of reducing and boiling everything down to his own dressing room. The whole world's against us.
Well,
the world's not. The world isn't against you, Fergie. Most of the world supports you. But he was brilliant at doing that, about having this sort of paranoia around his own team. And I think Newcastle need to do that. It's like, yeah, play like underdogs at a time when you're also really, really good at football. And Byrne talked about them losing a bit of that side of their identity. They need to be nastier. They need to get that mean streak back, because it is those sort of qualities that can get you out of a hole when you're having a bad day at the office, or it can close games out. You know, we've seen, admittedly, against very, very good teams this season, Liverpool, Arsenal, Barcelona, late defeats where, you know, a point or a draw would completely change the complexion of those games. And yeah, how do you do it? How do you make top dogs underdogs? But I think that is something they need to get back into their game. Eddie Howe agreed with that too.
Chris, last season's defeat at Brentford proved pivotal, didn't it? Will West Ham prove the same? Eddie Howe called for a period of reflection.
So yeah, the Brentford match which I was at last year, early in December, was sort of the nadir, really. It was the point where, I mean, Newcastle actually had attacked quite well in the first half. I think it was 2s each at half time. Right, yeah. They'd given away some dodgy goals, and then second half sort of fell apart, really, 4-2 down. They were stranded in mid-table, and lots of question marks about the way they were going to move forward. And then they went on their 9-game winning run. Sandro Tonali moved back to the number 6 position permanently, and that's where the cup final victory and then Champions League qualification really emerged from. I mean, I think it's slightly different with West Ham. I hope it is the point where Newcastle don't sink any lower and finally find a performance. But I don't think it's different in that Newcastle are doing well in the Champions League at home. They've been, again, performing all right. They're obviously have progressed in the Carabao Cup as well. And I don't think it's as much Newcastle scratching around as they were at that point. At that stage, it was the Newcastle just hadn't really played well at all up till that stage of the season. It was difficult to see the way forward. I don't see a massive redefining of any one specific position in the way that Sandro Tonali was moved, and that completely transformed the way Newcastle played. But I do hope that it's basically a line in the sand, and that standards have to be better, and that certainly away from home, Newcastle need to find a way to perform better. And whether that means that the midfield, for example, has to be that midfield trio, some have classed as the best in the Premier League, we've waxed lyrical about whether they need to be separated away from home and a different sort of system or makeup of that midfield is required. I think perhaps we've reached that time.
Yeah, I mean, the other big difference from Brentford last season is that Newcastle had a full week after that. And so what Howe did, not actually for the first time last season, but was to have individual meetings with all his players. You know, there was a sense of unsettledness. What would that word be?
Unsettlement.
Unsettlement. I like that. There was a sense of unsettlement throughout the dressing room, whether it was Gordon having his head turned by Liverpool, Isak, and also the uncertainty above Howe at the club and the way that had sort of infiltrated everything, the PSR shambles, all of that. But it was a difficult place, the dressing room, and he took all of his players individually, had meetings, tried to get to the bottom of their own individual circumstances, didn't read the Riot Act, I don't think, but there had to be some pretty basic questions. This season, there's no time for that. I mean, like, you know, 2-3 days after West Ham, you've then got a Champions League game. So, I mean, that idea of a period of reflection, I'm not sure really what that means in context. You would think that now that they've got that win, you know, they will have to be asking each other some sort of fairly brutal, basic questions about what they can do. But, you know, like we've seen Brentford, what they've done. They've got Keith Andrews as manager, formerly the set-piece coach. You know, like if you go there and are soft, you'll get turned over. And so, you know, whether practically Newcastle can do a lot post-West Ham, I don't know. But you would also hope that they've got enough about them to rouse themselves for it. We'll see.
And Chris, interestingly, Eddie Howe didn't change much against Athletic. Do we think he will against Brentford?
What I found fascinating about this is when George was talking earlier about sort of Newcastle being a cup team and you expect them to perform. Did Eddie Howe select a largely same side, barring two changes, one of which was Kieran Trippier come back after illness, because he backed his players to perform on Tyneside in another big Champions League occasion? But if Newcastle had played Brentford away midweek in the Premier League, would he have made more changes? And I'm intrigued by that, because I think there should be changes for this weekend. A, because most of those players have played twice already this week. Fatigue setting in, Bruno Guimaraes. I mean, how he even started, how he even joked, and Bruno himself joked that maybe physically he probably wasn't quite there, and obviously he was withdrawn early because he'd had this illness. But midfield-wise, I've already mentioned, two games in a row, that midfield has not functioned correctly away from home. I wouldn't start that midfield trio, certainly not in the same formation as before. Will he move to a back five? Does he think they need greater solidity there? Particularly now Lewis Hall's back, could he be a wing back and then Dan Burns slides in as a sort of left-sided centre-half? I'm just really intrigued to see, because I think there should be greater changes. I wouldn't want to see largely the same side that went out against West Ham, because fundamentally I think something isn't working away from home, which is different to playing at home in cup competitions.
Is there any chance the lesser-spotted Johan Wisser might make an appearance against his former club?
We'll have to see. Interestingly, Howe wasn't asked about him, probably for the first press conference since the end of the transfer window, post-Athletic. This is the kind of period that he was expected to come back. We know he's out on the grass. Howe talked not too long ago about him being around, but that he effectively needed a mini pre-season because he hasn't had that. In terms of changes, in terms of options, my goodness, it would be good to get him back, to have a more recognised centre-forward amongst the squad. Should also, of course, mention that Willasula had to be withdrawn at the last minute against Athletic with his own ankle injury, that he's been playing with in recent weeks. They decided to do that in order to get him 100% fit. So, whether he'll be back for Brentford, you would think might be doubtful. I'll have to wait and see. But it would give Newcastle such a lift to have this player who is direct. He scores goals, far more similar to Alexander Isak in terms of that goal-scoring prowess than Nick Waltimada. They need him back. Will it come too soon? Maybe. We're heading again to another international break. So, do they take the decision to kind of hold him back for that? But it would be a big thing to see him at Brentford. Whether it comes too soon, though, we'll have to wait and see.
Yes, we will. Right then, chaps, let's wrap things up. Huge thanks, of course, to everyone who's subscribed so far to our ad-free and extra time shows through Support and Cast. To find out more about protecting the future of the pod and hopefully helping us grow, please go to podonthetine.supportandcast.fm for more details. And if you can't afford a subscription or you don't want to pay, that's also absolutely fine. Please keep enjoying the free-to-air Pod on the Tyne episodes that we produce. We love and appreciate you too. We'll hopefully be able to bring you some great offers on teeth whitening strips very soon. Sounds like fun, doesn't it? Right then, chaps, thank you very much for your time. Chris, you've got a hot date with Y Scout, haven't you? You lucky, lucky boy.
I have indeed. That Dan Byrne goal that George has decided he's going to marry, that is what I'm going to be looking at and the technique behind it. I'm going to mention this, that I've been trying to find someone to speak to about it, a very good header of the ball. I managed to finally get in touch with Sir Les Ferdinand. But when I was struggling to necessarily find someone this morning, one of my editors had suggested that maybe I speak to a physicist or a math professor to talk about the Magnus effect in terms of the curvature of the ball and the way that it moved, which I can't work out whether that was meant as a joke or whether that was being serious. But
so he's clearly been reading Chris Lane on Discord then, hasn't he, about the space-time continuum.
Quite. Just you mentioned our listeners, Taylor, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Dave.
Oh, Dave.
Who I met in the Discovery Museum Cafe on Tuesday. James had run past him and clearly made a lot of noise, but Dave did not comment on that fact, just said, oh, hi Chris, just wanted to say I really enjoy the pod. So that was very nice to hear. And the unusual locations that people just tell you they enjoy the pod, so I just wanted to give him a bit of a shout-out.
Lovely stuff.
Not that you asked me, but I'm going to go back and watch Dan's goal on repeat whilst enjoying a period of reflection.
Nice.
At the pub.
I'm not prepared to comment any further.
Oh, yes. Let's all go and reflect on Dan Byrne's goal. It's a thing of beauty. Right, then, next up, Pot on the Tyne, a free-to-air match day show, and we face Brentford on Sunday. Please get in touch. Email us, podonthetyne@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter X and Blue Sky @podonthetyne. That's it. Thank you for your time, chaps. Thank you, Chris.
You're very, very welcome.
And thank you, George.
Ta-ta for now.
And thank you to all of you for listening as well. We shall speak to you very soon from everybody at Pod on the Tyne. Take care. Goodbye.
Do you know when you catch something absolutely flush?
Yep.